Thank you for tuning in to another episode of Providence Coffee Talk this week. Pastor Charles here, and I am excited because I got to sit down this week with Robert Griffin and talk about different aspects of Shawboro and ministry, leadership, life, and what an enjoyable time that was. So I hope that you're encouraged by our conversation. And just a couple things to remind you of this week. First off, if you're interested in being part of one of these episodes, please reach out to me on Sundays or Wednesdays. Would love to get you plugged in. We have our Easter egg hunt coming up this weekend for the kids. It's a great time of fellowship. Get plugged in for that too. We have our Easter service on April 5th. It's going to be a great time, 11 o'clock in this room. You don't want to miss it. And also on April 26th, Sunday, April 26th, we're having our 200-year anniversary as a church. This is going to be a special time where we recognize where we've been and where we are, and I'm excited to celebrate that with you. So make plans to be here for that. But other than that, I hope you enjoy this episode. So let's take a sip and let's get into it. Well, welcome back to another episode of Providence Coffee Talk. And it has been a hot minute since we have had an episode, but that's because people haven't been telling me they want to be on. So you guys got to do that. And thankfully, about a couple weeks back, I had Robert Griffin say, "Hey, I've got spring break coming up and I would love to just sit and chat." And I said, "That's awesome. When's your spring break?" And so thankfully he has spring break before everyone else. And so it makes it a little bit easier, but sitting across from me today, I've got Mr. Robert Griffin. Robert, you can say, "Hey."
Hey there.
Hey, he's already got the voice. You're ready to go, man. You kind of have that radio voice already. Like, did you ever think about when you were a kid getting into radio and doing like talk show host or anything?
Well, it's interesting you mentioned that. Absolutely not. But as a kid growing up, I listened to the Baltimore Orioles on the radio.
So all right.
They had a radio announcer named John Miller who has done that for many, many years. He actually works for the San Francisco Giants now, but I listened to my share of radio growing up.
That's awesome. So you would listen to, I mean, I guess is Baltimore Orioles, is that like your team? Like if you had to pick a team?
It is my team.
Okay. So
typically in this part of North Carolina, you could pick up WTOP out of Washington, which at the time was the Orioles station because there were no Washington Nationals at that time.
So Baltimore Orioles, I guess I kind of forget, and this is probably just me not being a very big sports buff. I kind of forget that Baltimore has sports teams. I mean, Maryland in and of itself, it's kind of like the size of like three or four counties in Texas. So it kind of makes me think like, I couldn't imagine. And then Washington has their own sports team. So like how far of a distance would it be from like a Nationals game to an Orioles game? That's probably like what, 20 minutes?
A little bit longer, but it's not that far. It was a big thing when the Nationals came in existence. The Orioles were not happy because it affected their bottom line.
Well, I could imagine. I mean, and then what, you've got the Ravens up there too, and you've got the, I still call them the Redskins, which that's not politically correct now, I think, to call them that. But my favorite of Washington though was when they called themselves the football team. I thought that was incredible, right?
An excellent nickname for them, yes.
I don't know why they didn't just stick with that and then to be the Commanders now. But, I mean, I guess up in that area, you've got within the New England Patriots, you have the Baltimore Ravens and the Washington Commanders, and just football area, you have three pretty prolific teams right there. And then you think about all the baseball teams that are up along the coastline. That one's kind of wild to me.
Yeah, once you hit to Washington, there are plenty of professional athletic teams to keep your attention. There's no doubt about that.
Oh, yeah. I mean, New York has two baseball teams in the same city. I couldn't imagine. Like, I guess that's easy to be a fair weather fan, though.
Yeah, I would suspect so, but we'll leave New York out of it.
We'll leave New York. I mean, I guess that's a big, like, is it one of those things where you either love or hate them? Is that kind of how it is?
I would think so, yes. There's no doubt about that.
They do get dogged on a lot, I think, in terms of sports. Just, I don't know if it's just because they have that air about them. You know, they've always been the team. And so I guess you like, I always think of it like Dallas Cowboys. Everybody's like, oh, that's America's team. I don't know if the Dallas Cowboys are a good representation of America's football team.
They may have been a good representation when Tom Landry was coaching, yeah. because he would have been a good representation of America.
Yeah. But it seemed like from there, it just, but that's neither here. You've literally exhausted everything I know about sports. Like that's it.
Well, that's okay. That's probably a good thing on your part because I know more about sports than I probably should.
That's okay. No, it's for some people, like there are certain hobbies that, and I think sports stuff is a hobby. I do. I think people can get into it. And once you kind of get involved in it, it's more of like it's something to kind of keep your mind off of the other junk that goes on in the world. And that's not bad. So you coached for a long time as well, but and you were athletic director too, which we can talk about that some here in a minute, but out of the sports that we have, especially at professional sports, things like that, what is your favorite sport to watch and just kind of interact with? What's your favorite?
It really depends on what's in season.
Okay.
Like currently we're about to start the NCAA tournament.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a big thing with basketball. When my oldest daughter, Anna, got married, her son-in-law, Justin, was a big hockey fan, which was not something that was really on my radar. And I say he's a big hockey fan. He's really just a big Carolina Hurricanes fan.
That's okay.
And so I've become a Carolina Hurricanes fan, and now I watch their hockey because they have a very good team.
Yeah.
So, and then baseball season is about to start. And I've always been a golfer throughout my life, so I watch some of the big tournaments when they come up. So it really just depends what's in season. There's always something related to sports that can keep your attention.
So then what about NASCAR? Because it's also NASCAR season. Do you ever catch yourself flipping over to like just a 3-hour NASCAR race?
So that is one that I have never garnered an interest in, even though there are members of my family who are big NASCAR fans. I will say on occasion I would make sure to watch the Daytona 500.
Oh, yeah.
But other than that, that is not one that has caught my attention generally.
So I know that that's one where, too, people there was a long debate, especially like years ago, where people would say that it wasn't a sport. Like, what's your take on that? Would you say that NASCAR is technically a sport, or does it have its own kind of classification away from that?
I absolutely would think it's a sport because you have a large number of people who are trying to make that team successful.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a different kind of team than other sports, but it's a team.
Yeah.
It takes a lot in a pit crew to bring that car to where it needs to be. And then I'm pretty sure a driver has got to be in peak condition, because if you're going to drive in circles for as long as they have to drive and keep your attention at the speed they're going, yeah, I absolutely would say that's a sport.
So with your background knowledge then in leadership and coaching in that arena, you kind of hit on something there that I think would be fun to explore for a second. For you, is the definition of sports more around the competitive nature of it, or does the definition of a sport work more within the leadership ability and the team approach to whatever activity is going on? Does that make sense?
It does. Sport is such a broad term.
Yeah.
Because some sports, say tennis or golf, are more individualistic in nature, even though you have those who help you be successful at that level. Whereas other sports clearly involve more of a team or a community aspect.
Yeah.
I tend to move toward those with the team or the community aspect, where you've got to work with others to be successful in whatever the activity or the sport is.
Yeah. But when you coach, though, I know that because there was a season there in Currituck where you were athletic director, but when you coached, were you more prone to enjoy the coaching from the individual aspect or from the team aspect? Like, which one did you enjoy or appreciate more?
I appreciated the team aspect more if I had to choose.
Yeah.
Because I enjoyed seeing people work together.
Yeah.
And there's an individual aspect in building skill. And I don't think that that was in my strong suit in working one-on-one.
Yeah.
As opposed to trying to look at the big picture and form a collective that could play good defense or good offense or things of that nature. So I would definitely lean toward the team aspect.
Oh man. I'm a huge team guy myself. Like, that's one of my things. Like, I love the idea of bringing a group of people together and going, okay, how do we make this happen? I love that for a church aspect. I see it in church work where, you bring a group together and you go, okay, how do we make this work? Some people don't like that. Like, so when you were coaching, how did you handle that? When you had that one guy on the team that was kind of like, man, I'm better than all these people. Like, I don't need this. Like, just give me the ball, like, you know, give me the rock and let me go for it. How did you handle that as a coach when you had that one player or that one teammate who just didn't feel like, or maybe who felt like they were better or more superior than the rest of the team?
Well, that's certainly a challenge. In the game of basketball, you have to have somebody to throw it in when the other team scores. So if you're thinking you're that good, then let's just take everybody else off the court and just leave you against the other five players and see how that's going to work for you.
Yeah.
It's not going to work well. Now, if you can get the ball inbounds to yourself, then you've got to play against five defenders all by yourself, and you might be able to always beat the one defender, but then when there are four others who are waiting on you after that, you can do things like that to try to get across the point that you need your teammates. When you're working with teenage boys, that doesn't always sink in. I know that's surprising to you.
Yeah.
But everybody has a different mindset, which is one of the beauties of working with a team. When you've got 12, 13, 14 boys and you're trying to form a team, everybody thinks differently.
Mm-hmm.
And you have those individuals who think that I can do this, I can do that. And to try to get them to realize what it takes to be successful together is always a work. We would do one thing. I know this isn't quite the same thing, but we would have a parent meeting at the beginning of the season. And one thing that I found was interesting was I would just show them a regular equilateral triangle with the top pointing up.
Mm-hmm.
And I would tell the parents, and this works for the players as well, when you look at this team, this is your view of it because you're focused on either yourself or your child. As a coach, you have to flip the triangle upside down where the point of it is facing the bottom. As a coach, I've got to look at everybody the same.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're both wanting to have successful teams, but our perspectives are completely different because of what we come in looking at, whereas a player or a parent generally is focused on that one person, whereas I've got to focus on everyone. And so we both want the same things, but our perspectives are different.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting point in just leadership in general, because, you know, we always see in the leadership world that they always want to do that pyramid effect, like that everything's built upon a foundation and it goes up. But I see what you're talking about, like, especially from a parent aspect, like, I'm looking at how does this benefit my kid? I'm not looking at how does this benefit the team as a whole, right? I'm looking at what is this, like when Olivia did her volleyball, my concern was for my child, and I did appreciate that she was on a team, but I wanted to see her play. I wanted to see her do, and I wanted to see her And that was always a thing that was hard to teach her, that sometimes you're on a team, but that doesn't mean that you play. That sometimes you're there and you're supporting and you're encouraging and you are helping fill in just some of those other gaps, but that may not mean that you play the whole time. You know, you may just be able to be there a little bit. And I think, but as a parent, it's hard to watch that. It's easy to tell your kid that, but I think as a parent, it's hard to watch that. I can understand that from a church aspect too, that there's a lot of people that don't understand, well, this, again, even from church life, well, this is about me, right? There's a lot of people that I think that look at that equilateral triangle and they look at it pointing up going, well, this is for me. It's about me. Instead of looking at that grand picture as a whole. And that's one of the things that you and I have talked about a lot is how do we look at the life of the church? Not so much in our kind of like narrow blinder focused perspective, but more on the playing field as a whole. Like, okay, what do we have out there as a whole? And what does that mean for us as a church moving forward? So you've been here a long time, right? I mean, how many years have you been, you and Kelly been at Providence?
So we started coming in the late 90s.
Yeah.
We were moving back to Currituck from Raleigh, where we were working after school. So we've been here since the late 90s. Certainly a good while, but not as long as some of the families who have been here much longer.
But your family is essentially from the Shawboro area, right? Like your extended family?
So my father grew up in Shawboro. Uh-huh. That's correct. In fact, the house just south of the church, which we call the Cupolo House, was where he grew up and where I remember my grandmother living. So, yes, I definitely have extended family. The house across the street that is next to the post office is where her sister lived.
Okay.
So I have many memories of that Shawboro proper from my grandmother's perspective.
So was it a dirt road then when you were here, that 34, or was it paved already?
No, it was paved. It may be that TV was still black and white and yeah, all that sort of thing. But no, it was a paved road. The interesting thing, my grandfather passed long before I was born.
Yeah.
He was 12 years older than my grandmother was. He was, back then, there was still a train station at Shawboro, which is why that little road is called Station Lane, because okay, there was a train station there. And one of his jobs was being the conductor or the leader at that train station. So I did not know that because, again, he passed before I was born. But one of the interesting pieces of that was there used to be trains that brought people here.
Uh-huh.
And so Kelly's grandmother came from the mountains of North Carolina to here, and it's very likely that one of the first people she would have seen would have been my grandfather.
But this, it's hard for you to go back and like trace that and like find that information.
That's very correct. Yes.
That'd be pretty awesome if you could ever get to a point and go, hey, do you think, and if there was some record somewhere of people coming off a train and then your grandfather greeting them. So Station Lane, help me figure that out. Cause is that kind of right across, would that have been right across from where the church is, or was that further down near where the post office is?
So it's just south of the post office. It's still there.
Okay.
Station Lane goes toward the train tracks and then East Ridge Road goes the other way.
Oh, gotcha. Okay. And so what happened to that train station? Like, is there still like a remnant of it there? Or did they just tear it out and burn it down and say, that's it?
It's been gone for some time.
Okay.
I would say, I remember when it was coming to a close, I must have been 6 or 7 years old. They had a train come to pick people up just to ride from Moyock through Shawboro to Elizabeth City. The train picked us up in Moyock, let us off in Elizabeth City because I guess they were getting away with passenger trains at that time. That had to be in the late 70s, I'm guessing. So I remember that as a kid, and I don't think it was much longer than that the train station ceased to exist in Shawboro, and I don't know when they actually tore down the building, but it's been gone for quite some time.
Well, it may have taken them a long time because they still have the old post office up too. So
that is true.
I mean, I could probably go push on it hard enough and that whole thing would collapse. But that's interesting that you even say that too, because you don't, like, those are the dynamics of Shawboro I don't hear about a lot. I hear about the old general stores, like the old country stores that used to be around.
My grandfather owned one of those.
Really? Which one did he own?
The one on the corner of Station Lane.
Oh, so there was one on the corner.
There was.
So how many general stores did Shawboro? Because I'm like, I know that there was like a big grocery store where, like, I think the Water Place is now. And then there was one out near Juniper Ridge area. So
the one that I remember where the water store is now was JT's.
Okay.
JT Etheridge.
Okay.
He was the proprietor of that. That was still in existence when I was small. I remember going there, and back when we had quarter soda machines outside, getting a can of soda when I'd walk down from grandmother's house.
Nice.
I do remember that they served barbecue.
Ooh.
That you could have for a sandwich. But if you really want to know about all of those stores, you have to find somebody a little bit older than I
am. Oh, yeah.
Because some of those stores were gone when I have memory of that. So one of the things that does interest me is people who knew my grandfather, most of whom have passed. But when I started going to church here, there were several older men who knew him and relayed stories about him to me. And those things were so meaningful to me.
Yeah.
I remember Mr. James Farabee. When he knew my grandfather very well, and he would tell me things and tell me stories that really I treasure because I never knew him.
Okay.
And that was special to me.
Yeah, I mean, especially when you've got people in the area that have been around him for so long, and there's so many. That's, for me, the hard part. Like, I hear of all the cool stories of these I want to say old timers, but that's in a respectful way, not like in a disrespectful way, but, you know, some of these old timers that would sit around and tell the stories, and you hear even still their meaningful impact continues to linger within the church, within the community. So anytime that you can hear those fun old stories about, oh, I remember this, or I remember this, and or I remember when your granddad used to do this and things like that. I still hear those today about my grandparents. It's just like, I remember your grandpa. He was so good. Da, da, da. Like, that's great. And I still have, I have a box in my office. It's a big Starlight tub. And I was looking through it not too long ago, trying to let it air out. But it's all the old sermon notes from my grandpa.
Oh, wow.
Like, stuff that he had from back in, like, the 70s and 80s. And that he had written out. And some of it is legible. Some of it you could tell where his mind started to go a little bit. And it was harder for him to make sense of stuff. But, You even can read those things and see the impact that your family had in an area. And I think those are the important aspects of even our church. I think one of the things that we see in our church, and it's easy to neglect sometimes with growth, but one of the things I try to cherish and see is kind of like what you talk about, that lasting family impact that you see within the community and within the church that's been around for, gosh, 200 years now.
Right.
I think those aspects are important. But you guys got here in the late 90s. I know that Kelly's family is down in Grandy. And so you
Poplar
guys.
Poplar Branch.
Poplar Branch.
Poplar Branch.
Oh, do we have to? Is there like a big, like, do you have to make that distinction if you're down there? Like, do the people in the area go, no, I am not from Grandy. I am from.
I don't know that they do, but I would say that it would be important to say they're from Poplar Branch, because that is truly where they reside.
So that's kind of like we say Shawboro, but then you've got, well, there's Sligo.
Right.
Like, I've been to Sligo. There's a stoplight. So, like, what? And then they say, well, I'm from Maple. Okay, well, that's pretty much Currituck. Well, I'm in Barco. Okay, that could also just pretty much be Currituck. So, like, I feel like everything's kind of either Moyock, Currituck, or Shawboro. In terms of, like, postal codes around here. I don't see a whole lot of people with Barco, North Carolina as their address.
Well, and so if you're going outside of the county, I'm just going to say I'm from Currituck.
Yeah.
I don't, even though I live in Poplar Branch, I'm from Currituck.
Yeah.
And I think part of that is we have no incorporated towns.
Yeah.
So it's interesting in that dynamic, because if you say, well, I'm from Shawboro or I'm from Poplar Branch, and if you go outside a 10 or 15 mile radius, people are just going to look at you and and say, well, so.
Yeah. And yeah, that is kind of, because I grew up in kind of a town seat, county seat of a town, and we were Independence County in Arkansas. The town was Batesville, Arkansas, kind of the second oldest town in Arkansas. We had like 10,000 people in town. You know, that's kind of how many we had. And everyone around us like knew where Batesville was, but they also then assumed, oh, well, you're city folk. That's what they would say. And I was like, I don't know if that's true. Like, I don't think you've ever been to anything outside of, you know, 600 people. So, and I guess if under that perspective, yeah, city folk, but... when people ask me like, what church are you at? I'm like, well, I'm in Providence and Shawboro. Where's that? It's in Currituck. It's in Currituck. So, but you guys have been in the area, like you said, since the late '90s, but, you also came back and started teaching at the high school here. Did you start that back in the late '90s or was there like a progress to that?
No, I did. When we moved back, I was fortunate enough to get a job. They had a math teaching position opened at Currituck, so I came back. It was truly a blessing because my father was still teaching there at the time. So,
oh, awesome.
For 3 or 4 years, I was able to work with him, which not everybody gets the opportunity this day and age, mm-hmm. whereas in years past, it was very common for people to work with their parents and what their profession was. And for farmers, that's still true. But as the point of view as a teacher, generally that's not the case. So it was very fortunate that they had an opening there. And so I was able to work and I ended up staying at Currituck County High School for 28 years.
So what did your dad teach?
He also taught math and he also coached basketball, which is why I do what I do. was interesting when you were talking about what you had from your grandfather's sermons. Uh-huh. So my dad was a much better basketball coach than I ever was.
I was going to ask, yeah.
He was outstanding. And so one of the things that he left, he had a box full of his practice plans, which he kept on an index card, his daily practice plans. And as a coach, that was something that I should have referred to more than I did. Well, I would look at them from time to time as a matter of just day-to-day teaching and coaching. I didn't take the time to research what I had in front of me as well as I should have.
Yeah. That's one of the things I try to always go back to. Kind of like that, again, that reminder that there are guys who have done this before. And they've probably encountered some things or they've probably led through different things, like things, it's seasons that I'm in right now as a pastor. So I always try to go back and ask those guys. Like I've got some friends that are, you know, they're mid-80s. They've retired from pastoring, but they had done it for, you know, 60 years. And I was like, all right, give me some pointers. Like, help me understand this. And it's always good because they'll tell me to a T, well, I don't know if I have anything that I can give you, Charles. And I'm like, what are you talking about? Like, you have this wealth of knowledge. But when they tell me stuff, I usually try to go back and refer to those things and even lean on them when and where I can. So who was the better math person then, you or your dad?
I think he was superior to me in every way. No, he was very sharp. He knew his stuff and he had a way to motivate students. And, there are many people who come up to me today and tell me that he was their teacher, he was their coach, and how much they appreciated and enjoyed what he had to say and what he did for them.
So then how long were you guys able to teach together?
4 years. He passed away in 2001 from a brain tumor. So I started at Curry Tuck in the fall of 97.
Okay.
And then he actually had retired, but was going to come back and teach part-time when that happened. So it was about 4 years.
Okay. And then you stayed at Curry Tuck up until this last year. Is that correct?
Yes. I retired at the end of the 2025 school year.
So what all did you teach between or teach and coach between 1997 and 2025? Because that's a long span.
So right? I taught basically every math class that you could teach at the high school level, save calculus. I never taught that. I coached basketball at the junior varsity and varsity levels. I coached JV baseball as an assistant coach for a couple of years. And for 3 years, I was the athletic director.
And you've told me a lot about the athletic director time, that it was a rewarding time, but also a stressful time. And so,
well, it is. It's the nature of the job.
Yeah.
One of the rewards for that position is every day is different with all the different sports that are going on and with all the different pieces that it takes to be in that administrative capacity. No 2 days are the same, and everything was fresh. So that was truly enjoyable. But by the same token, the time aspect of that job was such that it is very stressful to, when I started that job, Anna, our oldest, was small, and I would leave home before she was up, and I would get home many evenings and she was down for the evening.
Yeah.
And then toward the end of my time as athletic director, Laura was born, and I just realized that I enjoy being the athletic director, but I want to enjoy my family more. Yeah. So I don't need to be staying in this because I need to be available more for my family.
Oh, yeah. That's such a tough balance. I don't know how, like, I am, you know, I'm Olivia's 11. I'm still trying to figure out like that balance sometimes. Like, okay, how do you balance life and family? How do you balance work and family? How do you balance those things out? What do you think are some of the things that, you've learned over the years, especially as just as a dad, as a parent, but also, you know, a community member, an employee of the school, you know, a member of the church? What are some things that you've been shown and developed over the years of how to balance that work, that life, that family? Like, how have you been able to do that and make those things happen?
Well, you have to be able to say no.
Yeah.
And sometimes that's easy and sometimes that's not easy, because it's important that you can understand what is important, and you've got to be willing to pray about it. You can't automatically, when you want to say yes, there are things that you want to be helpful. As a teacher, you want to do this. Mm-hmm. But sometimes you have to take a step back. You have to sleep on it a night or two or a week. And you have to decide, what can I do and what can I not do? And you have to be willing to step back and say no to things that on the surface of them, they're good. But you have to realize, where do you want to spend your time? Because no matter what you're working on, every day is 24 hours. Every week is 7 days. And you can start finding things that you're interested in and things you would like to do and things that people say, hey, you would be good at this, or I would like you to work on this. And all of those things may be true, but you can't make 24 hours into 25 hours.
Right.
Time is finite in that capacity. And so you have to be willing to say no to things, even though part of you is saying, well, I won't say yes to that, but you have to be willing to say no.
Yeah. So that's one of the pieces that if there was ever any advice that anybody had given me over the years about balancing that out, no is always that two-letter word that they say, you've got to figure out how to master that in a way that's good, because it's easy to say no to everything. And then you just become like,
right.
impossible to work with. And so
that's correct. I mean, there's so much truth to what you've just said that you're not saying no to everything, because when you're presented with an opportunity, mm-hmm. every opportunity has merit. And as you're presented with things that come up in your life, you need to be able to consider what can happen versus what the cost is. And sometimes, as you think about it, things can be clear cut. And sometimes at the end of it, you can think about it, you can pray about it. And at the end of the day, it's almost like, just give me a coin. I need to flip it and decide which way should I go with this. But you've got to just consider carefully as opportunities come up. You know, the reason I stopped coaching was because Laura, our youngest daughter, was getting to middle school age where she was playing sports. And I realized that as a basketball coach, because at the time she also played basketball, I would miss opportunities with her if I continued to coach.
Yeah.
And I didn't want to do that. Yeah. And so, not that I didn't enjoy coaching, I did. But at the end of the day, where did I want to spend my time?
Oh, yeah. That's such a tough pull. I mean, because there's a lot of things when I first finished seminary, I wanted to go back in and go right into the next phase of degree work and just kind of grow and learn in the process. And then, you know, we got married and we had, you know, full-time church stuff. And then I thought, well, maybe give me some years experience and I'll go back then. Well, then I went back to school when Olivia was one, and I realized then, I was like, that's probably was not a good time to go back to school. And so after that kind of couple year season, you know, Melina and I, we said, hey, let's kind of take a conscious break away from thinking about that. And, you know, we're now in that point where it's like, okay, if I were to go back to school, what would that look like now? And is it feasible? Is it possible? Is it something to do? So that's kind of the area we're exploring. But it had to be years of saying, as much as I want to do that, as much as I'd like to go ahead and do that and get it done right now, the season we're in, kind of like what you're saying with Laura, I'm going to miss things in order to go and pursue this. And I don't want to do that anymore.
And that's one of the things you talk about seasons. I so appreciate Kelly. When Anna was born, our oldest, and then Laura after her, we made a conscious decision that she was not going to work full time.
Yeah.
And so we were fortunate that we were able to find a job, and she still works for the same company, that they allowed her to work limited hours from home while our children grew up.
That's awesome.
Yes. That was truly a blessing, because that was something that was important to both of us, was that one of us, specifically Kelly, would be home and be around our kids as they grew up. And now, as I have retired, people ask Kelly, well, are you going to retire? And she says, no, I took my time up front when my kids were small. So I have a little while before I'm going to be ready to retire. And I appreciate that. Yeah. If she decided tomorrow she wanted to retire, I wouldn't stand in her way. But that's been her perspective on that, and I do appreciate that.
Yeah, she's so wise in that way. Like, I love just, she's one of those people that when you present a question, she immediately begins processing it and thinking about it. And so you don't just get a quick response. Like, you get a very considered and thoughtful response, usually like a few moments later. But she's thinking through and processing stuff, and I love it. Because you can always see those wheels spinning. And, but you mentioned that you just retired, but you kind of didn't retire. Like, you essentially just went and worked at a different school.
Well, that's true. Once I hit the age where I could retire from North Carolina, uh-huh. I'm sure I aggravated some people where I worked. They said, well, are you going to retire? I said, well, I'm day to day, week to week, month to month.
Yeah.
And what I meant by that was I knew I was not ready to stop working, but I was going to be open for opportunities that presented themselves. And so when this opportunity to teach at Stonebridge in Chesapeake presented itself and I researched it, there was a part of me that has always wondered, what would it be like to teach in a school that is truly a Christian school?
Yeah.
Because a public school is certainly not that.
Yeah.
And this was an opportunity that presented itself to me, and so I took it. So I, you're right, I retired, but really it was just a job change.
Yeah.
And so this has been good. It's been rejuvenating for me because this is the foundation for what we're teaching at Stonebridge is what, in my opinion, a foundation should be.
That's awesome. So, yeah, because I was going to ask about that because, you know, there's so many different, I say so many different, there's traditional approaches to schooling, and then there's non-traditional approaches to schooling, which is funny to me because we flip-flopped that over the years, right, where the public schooling institution or approach is now considered the traditional method, whereas if you went back, you know, I don't even know how many hundreds of years you'd have to go back, but if you went back hundreds, it would be almost flip-flop where the more apprenticeship style method of education would be more traditional, and grouping kids in a room together from 5 to 18 would have been like, whoa, that's weird. You know, they're 12. They need to be plowing the field. Like that's what they need to be doing. So kind of considering how there's different approaches and there's ways to appreciate all approaches of schooling in a method, in a way, what are some of the differences that you've noticed specifically from being in more of a larger capacity public school setting versus a smaller capacity Christian foundation school setting? Like, what are some of the bigger differences that you've seen just in those two approaches?
Well, you really can't compare the two other than the fact that they're both educational institutions.
Uh-huh.
But with anything, regardless of how you approach teaching,
mm-hmm.
you have to start with the foundation of it. Like, what is the overall goal? And whereas both of those are trying to impart knowledge onto students, a Christian school, the foundation of everything we teach should go back to Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
Everything is from God. God is the creator of everything.
Yeah.
And so that everything that we do as a Christian school comes back to God's hand and God's providence.
Uh-huh.
And when you think about a public school, that is not the foundation of what students learn.
Yeah.
And so it's hard to compare the two. And one of the things that I was thinking about recently is how flippantly in the English language we use the word good.
Yeah. Okay.
And you think about people being good or learning something that's good, whereas in Scripture it tells us that no one is good.
Yeah.
Not even one. And the idea that this is a good school, well, I don't know what we mean by that, because Scripture tells us that we're not good.
Mm-hmm.
We're all sinners saved by the grace of God, and you have to teach from that perspective.
Mm-hmm.
And you're just not, you don't get that perspective in a public education.
Yeah.
And so it's just where you start from is different, even though in both schools we offer similar courses. The foundation we're teaching from is just different. And to me, that's where we should be teaching from.
I think that's so smart too, because the metrics can look, the metrics a lot of times are what we determine as good. Even in church work, like we do the same thing. And when church life pastors and things like that, we'll say, this is a good, healthy church, right? But a lot of times we're basing it off the metrics of the space that they occupy, the amount of people that occupy that space, and then the qualifying numbers that constitute the organization. And so we determine based off of sometimes those, I don't want to say baseline metrics, but more of those kind of out in front of you type things that you can see, the visual metrics. A lot of times we base a church's health off of that. But yet I know of many, like, and I don't know if this is a good way to compare like a Granny Smith apple to a Gala apple, but there are some churches out there that are very large, large churches with, you know, 10, 20,000 people coming through multiple campuses each week. Yet they've drifted so far from the foundation that they're spending all of their time trying to keep the organization going, and they drift from the foundation. But yet we look at them on the visual metrics and say, well, they're a good church. But then you look at it, like you said, from the foundational level, there's a lot of more, I would say, medium to smaller churches out there. Even us in Southern Baptist Life, we're considered a large church in Southern Baptist Life based off of our numbers. But when you even look at some of that, sometimes you have just a very healthy and vibrant church. Their rural setting is just different. Like the setting that they're in is just different, but their foundation is there, and they maintain that foundation, and they keep that foundation, and they continue to grow in the word. They grow in the Lord. And to me, that's just as healthy as the appearance. And so I think that I understand it from that perspective. When you talk about the relationship and education, how you have to have that solid foundation, and that's a different place to teach from.
Well, it is. When you think about how education has changed over, as you mentioned, hundreds of years.
Yeah.
The secularization of our society, uh-huh, and of our educational system has chipped away at that foundation. Mm-hmm. And if you went back and looked at the foundation of what was taught hundreds of years ago versus the foundation today, you wouldn't recognize it, even though we're still teaching reading, writing, and arithmetic, but the overall values behind what we're teaching, that has completely shifted. And it's not been something that's happened just this year or last year. It's taken a long time to get where we are.
Yeah.
And that's unfortunate, because the beauty of America was it was founded on Christian principles.
Right.
And this was based on the ability to worship freely and to understand that we were imbued with certain characteristics by our Creator. And now we're at a place in public education where we don't acknowledge the fact that we were created by our Creator.
Right.
And when you don't start from that point of view, that leads you to a very dangerous place when you carry things out further.
But yeah, I mean, I'm sure that over the many years that you taught in public school system, you saw that shift coming. Like, it was probably one of those things where even as a teacher, you could see where the more and to me, from more of like a student and now as a parent looking in at public education, but from the student level, I didn't see it so much. Like, as a kid, you don't see the shifts happening.
Well, no. And I don't know that, I mean, the shifts had already happened when I started teaching. They were well underway. It's only as I've gotten older and read more and researched more,
right,
and that I realize that things that you just take for granted, this is the way things are, but you realize that things that you're taught in university settings, as far as this is how education should work, that they're all formed from a secular point of view,
okay,
and not from that Christian foundation. And as Christians, it is very important that what you're teaching your children comes from a Christian foundation. And, you know, I've been blessed. My children were blessed. They had in my opinion, a good education, but it was a secular education because it came through the public school, and they got their Christian education from Providence Baptist Church.
Yeah.
And it shouldn't be that way. It should be that their education as a Christian comes from not just their church, but it should be from everything they do.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if, knowing what I know now, if I was in a position to offer a more Christian education for my kids at a younger age, would I have done so?
It's a tough call.
Yeah, I mean, because in Currituck, you don't have the same resources that a person in Chesapeake has,
right,
or a person in Raleigh or Charlotte has.
Right.
Because in many places, the public school system is really your only realistic choice.
Yeah.
And there are good people there. They're Christians who teach in the public schools. And there are facets of it that still have Christianity, but the foundation is not. And that's important to understand.
Well, and that's always been the thing, because people assume that because Melina and I homeschool, that we just automatically hate public school. Like, the, for whatever reason, now homeschool families get classified as this, well, you just hate public school. And we always step back and say, no, we understand that what we are able to do in the context of our culture today is a privilege. Like, we know that the ability for us to teach our kids day in and day out on the foundational basis of God's word and how we interpret the world through God's word and through that lens and developing that worldview in our kids, we understand that what we have built and developed is a privilege in our current society. And not everyone can do that. But because of that, we do feel like we have this almost like a ministerial need to be available to the public school systems where we can, because that's why you'll always hear me say that I want Providence to be as much of a resource for our public school systems as we possibly can, because I do feel like there's going to come a point where people are going to go, we need something different. You know, I think that eventually in the education system, there's going to be that shift. Somebody's going to rise up and say, we need to be thinking of something different. And that's when I think churches need to step up and say, hey, we're here to help. How can we be a resource for you? And so that's why Melina and I always feel like there's that passion for us to to equip our churches to be a ministerial arm to the public education system. And we want to try to invest in as much as we can in those ways. Do I think that there is that philosophy out there that pastors should send their kids to school to be missionaries? I have a hard time with that one, and that's just maybe on a personal level, but I just don't feel like my kids are equipped to do, I wouldn't send my kid to a third world country to do mission work by themselves, leave them and then say, hey, hope it works out. And if I wouldn't send my kid to that based off where they're at right now, why would I give them the missionary pressure and calling when that may not be the calling of their life? You know, anyway, there's a whole nother list of things there, but to us, that's the reason we homeschool. We homeschool because we realize that for our family, we have an opportunity to be able to do that. But like you said, if the opportunity wasn't there, and if there wasn't any other option, then by all means, parents should invest in their child's education and within the system that's providing it. And I think that would help go a long way within public education today. If you could see more parental involvement in it, not just at home, but even in the aspect of looking at that teacher and saying, hey, I can come and read a book to the class, or I can come and just be available to help you with whatever you need, and partnering alongside those teachers and helping in that way. But I know, again, even that organization has changed a lot over the years in that way.
Yeah. And that, to me, is the key, whether your child is in public school, in a Christian school, is being homeschooled. As a parent, it is incumbent upon you to invest in your child.
Yes.
He is, because the reality is your child is a gift from God.
Mm-hmm.
You're just stewarding one of God's children.
Oh, love that, yeah.
And you've got to invest that time, and you've got to be willing to put that time in, regardless of what the educational setting that you choose for your child.
Right.
That is so important. That is something that I can speak from Kelly and our experience that is such a blessing, that to be able to spend time with your children to help them grow. It doesn't mean they're going to turn out perfect no matter what you do. There are going to be issues and challenges along the way, because as much as a parent, you hate to say it, your child is also a sinner.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. They're also not perfect. My 3-month-old grandchild is going to be a sinner.
Yes.
I have a hard time believing that, looking at him right now, but I know that to be true.
Yeah.
So just the ability to spend time intentionally with your family and your children,
yeah,
regardless of how you choose to educate them, that will be something as a parent that you will always be thankful that you do.
Yeah. Well, hey, we got a few more minutes left. I do want to ask one more thing of you, just because I feel like it's good for where we're at in the season that we're at, even at Providence. So you've been in leadership and deacon leadership here, and you've served on committees, and you've been involved in many things over the years here at Providence. What are some of the key things that you think you've taken from maybe leadership at school or even leadership here? What are some key things that you've taken that God has shown you about where you're leading at Providence now currently as a deacon, and where you see the future of Providence going? Like, what are some things that God is kind of showing you and revealing to you during this season?
Well, you have to be prayerfully considering where God is leading you.
Mm-hmm.
Everything that we do as a church, and we're coming up on our 200th anniversary, which yep. is quite amazing.
That's pretty awesome, yeah.
But everything we do, we have to be mindful of the Holy Spirit's leading in us. And in terms of leadership, it's important to know the feelings of those other Christians around you. It's important to know what opportunities present themselves. And it's important to understand to respect tradition, uh-huh. but to realize that things change
yeah.
as we move forward. God does not call us to stand still. God calls us to spread his word, to speak the truth to others.
Mm-hmm.
And in order to do that, we have to be looking forward with respect to the things that our church has done in the past. But we have to look forward. We have to be a forward-thinking church. And I think we are. And to me, that's the importance of leadership, is to be realizing, where are we headed? Where is the Lord leading us to serve our community, to serve those around us, and ultimately to forward his word throughout the world?
Yeah, I think that's so true. And we're definitely in that season. I mean, I think that you and I, we've had those conversations in both privately and publicly of just how we feel like God is. I don't want to say transitioning us, because that's a weird phrase to use as a church, but I do think that he's impressing on our hearts that, hey, I've got something for you. Just soften your heart to explore what that can look like. And I think that we do operate in a manner here that is discerning. I don't think that we just jump the gun. I think that we do definitely take our time to really evaluate the need and then where we can fit within that need. And I think that's a big piece that I love about our church. But yeah, I think just the ability for us to remind ourselves, like you said, God isn't a God who stands still, but he's a God who, and he's not calling us to stand still, but he's calling us to, even in the series, even if it's a season of waiting, he's still calling us to follow him, even in a series of waiting. So, well, man, I do appreciate you coming in to chat today, especially on spring break. You're on spring break. And so, yeah,
it feels like spring out there,
yeah,
doesn't it?
Yeah, it's a cool, crisp 40 degrees.
Right.
Super awesome in March. But, Yeah. Thanks so much for jumping in, and thanks for taking time out of your day today. I appreciate it.
Well, glad to be here.
Yeah. And if you guys are interested in any future episodes, we definitely need people that we can interview, because if not, it's just going to be me talking occasionally, and that's not near as fun as talking with others. So if you've got any comments, or if you've got any suggestions on people that you'd love to hear from, let me know. And if you want to be on one of these yourself, just come find me on a Sunday or Wednesday, and I'd love to get you plugged in. Other than that, thank you guys so much for being here, and I hope you have an awesome week.